Good afternoon, and welcome to the 37th Municipal CEO Briefing by Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito and the team from the Baker Polito administration on COVID-19 and the impact on cities and towns throughout the state. I'm Jeff Beckwith, the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Municipal Association, very pleased to serve as the platform for these briefings. As you have asked questions and the administration has answered and engaged in a dialogue to collaboratively move forward as partners through an unprecedented public health crisis. We've reached another milestone in the pandemic with additional direction, but also additional questions going forward as we continue to navigate together. The format for this meeting will be the same as the other 36, which is we will have presentations, and then the questions will be asked by all of you through the chat. I'll moderate that. The Lieutenant Governor or members of her team will provide responses, and then as we will work our way through and cover as much as we possibly can in the hour that we have together. In addition to that, we will have, for the last 10 minutes, Heath Folley from the federal funds team for the administration, and he has some other colleagues available to talk a little bit, extremely high level, answer a couple questions on ARPA, but then talk about the upcoming webinar we have later in this week with the administration and MMA to talk about federal funds going forward. Right now, it's my pleasure to, and also a summary of this call will be posted on the MMA website along with a recording so that you can forward and share to other municipal colleagues all throughout Massachusetts. And I think it's important to make a special note to say that your attention, you meaning the local leaders of Massachusetts, your attention throughout the course of this pandemic in not only raising issues, but leading your communities through an unprecedented crisis has been remarkable. And we really appreciate not only everything you've done, but you're making these briefings a big success. And now it's my pleasure to turn the meeting over to Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito, a true partner for all of you. Lieutenant Governor, thank you for all that you've done, and we look forward to this briefing.
Okay. Thank you very much, and good afternoon, Jeff. 37, that number will have a different meaning in my mind forever. I mean, it's a number, but it represents an amazing team of people, not only the team that was assembled through the executive office, bringing the agency heads to the table, but for all the municipal leaders that have been part of the MMA for many years, but also that have been part of these meetings over the course of this past year, represent the team of people that kept the people of our Commonwealth safe, that helped us as an administration make the best decisions that we could with the available information that we had at the time to make the decisions. Having the ability to listen and learn from you. You know, there were many chats that lit up with a lot of ideas, concerns, a lot of anxiety and frustration expressed, as well as a sense of accomplishment all the way through this journey. And we could not have done our jobs in the executive office, serving the people of our Commonwealth without your partnership and without your hard work and ability. I said to Jeff before today's meeting that I am so grateful to have had the opportunity before the pandemic hit to have such a strong relationship with MMA and the municipal officials across the state. That served us all well to be able to have this relationship, have the trust that comes with that, and the ability to exchange and share to serve all of the people here in Massachusetts. And perhaps it does set us apart from some of our other counterparts in places across the country. But I'm very proud of what you've been able to do with us. And I want to say thank you. I also want to thank you for all of your efforts over the course of the rollout of the vaccine. That was obviously a major pivot in this journey when the vaccines were developed and made available, and to be able to get them out into people's arms allowed us to make the further announcements on reopening yesterday. 75% of our adult population over the age of 18 has at least one shot in their arm. The second appointments for people that are waiting for their second dose, almost 100% show up for that second dose to be administered. And now rolling up the vaccines to the younger populations of children. In fact, I brought my daughter, she's 15, last night to receive her first shot at the Worcester state site. It's just terrific, the level of partnership and the participation from the people of our Commonwealth willing to participate in the vaccine program. And because of that high participation rate, we expect to reach our goal of 4.1 people of our Commonwealth fully vaccinated around the end of this month, beginning of June. And we could not have done that without you. And we want to continue to make sure that people who are eligible and want access to the vaccine get it. So we'll continue our efforts there. We have over 975 locations in our Commonwealth where people can receive the vaccine. We have walk-up opportunities, no appointment needed. There'll be pop-up at places where the vaccine is available. And we'll have to be as creative as we can over these upcoming months to make sure that people are still interested in receiving the vaccine in our communities across our state. So we'll continue to work together. As you know, yesterday we made a lot of announcements, and I'm going to walk through them. And there most likely will be a number of questions or ideas that you have around the announcements and what's ahead relative to municipal governance. So let's see what we can get through in this hour. And then, of course, I appreciate all of the follow-up that's done in between our meetings over the course of this year. And we have some work groups that are set up to help us develop a set of decisions that are really needed as municipal government transitions to the next phase. So as we all know, that effective May 29th, the face covering order will be rescinded and will be replaced with the CDC's new guidance for vaccinated and unvaccinated people. We will also be issuing on the 29th through DPH a public health advisory urging all unvaccinated residents to wear face coverings in most indoor settings. And we appreciate your help with that messaging. Consistent with the CDC's guidance, DPH will advise vaccinated residents it is safe to go back to doing the things that they did pre-pandemic. That's a huge accomplishment for everyone. Consistent with CDC, the DPH will be issuing a new public health order that will mandate the use of face coverings by everyone, whether vaccinated or unvaccinated, in a small number of specific places like nursing homes, healthcare settings, public transportation, and in schools. So there'll be specific information around that. And for these kinds of facilities that are in your municipalities, you'll need to understand what to do there. On June 15th, the state of emergency will end. And that means the specific orders that have been put in place over the course of this year will end as of June 15th. And we could talk about that further. With regard to youth and face coverings and sports, there's been a change effective today. Youth and amateur sports guidance is updated to no longer require face coverings for youth athletes 18 and under while playing outdoor sports. Today, I'm a very popular mom in my household. Effective May 29th, all amateur and youth sports guidance will be lifted. Also effective today, masks will no longer be required for outdoor activities like recess in these settings. DESE and EEC are also updating their guidance to allow for the sharing of objects in classrooms like books. This guidance will remain in effect after May 29th. Face coverings will remain required indoors for staff and students of K through 12 schools and early education providers. Basically, there are provisions in place for the school year. It's important that these provisions stay in place for the schools for this school year so that there is consistency all the way through the end of the school year. There will be updated guidance for summer camps, which will be effective May 29th. We obviously will share those with you, Jeff, to disseminate. And face coverings will not be required for outdoor activities as part of summer camp. It should be stated that these decisions were made with our medical advisory board. We feel comfortable adhering to the CDC guidance and knowing that our own medical advisory board that has been part of the decision-making over the course of this past year also feels comfortable. Relative to vaccines, as you know, 12 and older are now eligible to receive the Pfizer vaccine. We appreciate your help there, as well as doing all the things, knocking on doors, making calls in our hardest hit communities to continue to have the vaccine penetrate people who have not been vaccinated or have made an appointment to get vaccinated. Regarding the transition for your municipalities, we will continue to work with you. Just because this is the 37th meeting that we're doing in this format doesn't mean that this ends. There will be continued work done with you, with our colleagues in the legislature, to ensure an orderly and smooth transition for municipal government all throughout our Commonwealth as we shift from emergency orders and special legislation to the next phase. That means that there will be a working group to talk about these items. Jeff has already assembled a list that we are working through with our legal team. We have the legal team on this call this afternoon to talk about some of those items now. And then obviously there'll be more discussion and analysis that will take place through our internal working group that Jeff is a part of. There will also be a working group separate and apart from the municipal transition working group to talk about with you how to leverage the federal dollars that are coming into municipalities as well as coming into the state. I know Heath is providing an analysis of this all the way through, but has some special sessions coming up. But I also just wanted to say in general that we have a working group that Jeff and some others will be a part of to think more strategically how we can leverage state and local dollars that are coming from the feds in order to recover, in order to expand economic opportunities and make sure that we use these dollars so smart and so effectively here in our Commonwealth and with all of you. So there's some really good thinking being done there. There will be pain in this process. This whole process has involved pain and sacrifice and an ability to learn from each other and make the best decisions possible with what we know. And we will do that with you in these upcoming weeks as well. Thank you for continuing to share the messages and updates in your community using all the channels that are available to you. I also want to state that while we are transitioning and making on May 29th, doing away with the restrictions and capacity limits, that doesn't mean that some establishments in your communities might want to continue certain restrictions. And we ask that you support them. We obviously want patrons and workers to feel comfortable in these places and to respect the wishes of private business owners as they also transition into this next phase. I know that we've got a lot going on in the chat now already. So what I think is the best thing to do is to just save my notes relative to our thank yous for later. And let's dive right into the chat or we can hear from one of our panelists next and then go into the chat, whatever you would like.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. You've covered a lot, and there are already a lot of questions in the chat. So I think it's good to start to plow through those as best we can. We thank, as we're transitioning there, I would like to thank the panelists who participated all throughout this process, Dr. Larry Madoff and Sean Cronin and Jana Ferguson, the Assistant Commissioner at DPH, and the whole team that has participated in this. We also, I know, have Governor's Chief Legal Counsel, Bob Ross, on standby here to answer questions. And then I did mention, Heath and Sean and Brendan are also on the call. We anticipate having multiple webinars with them going forward on the complexities of ARPA. So this is not goodbye to you by any means. So we'll start right now. There are a lot of questions about the transition period. I will say that we received one that came in yesterday, just a question. This is even before the transition. A community is planning on holding a parade, a Memorial Day parade, before May 29th. Do they still need, the question they asked is, do they still need to file a safety plan for that parade?
Is the parade before the 29th?
Yes, it's a Memorial Day parade.
They should submit a safety plan and discuss that with your local Board of Health.
Yes, that's what we thought, but I promised that we'd ask that question. So now to the chat. Does the end of the state of emergency have any impact on Chapter 5 of the Acts of 2021? We postponed our municipal election under this act to the end of June. I believe the answer to that question is that's the one that allows the no excuse absentee ballots for municipal elections through June 30th. I believe that's Chapter 5. I see Bob Ross is unmuted.
Jeff, Chapter 5, the short answer is that ending the state of emergency doesn't have any impact because Chapter 5 changed to dates certain, changed what had been date certain to what will be date certain. Some of them are June 30th, some of them are July 31. So the end of the state of emergency has no effect on that. Chapter 5 of the Acts of 2021 applies throughout.
Great. Although because there are municipal elections coming up this fall, there are many communities that are interested in extending beyond the June 30th date so that this fall's meetings have people feeling comfortable if they're unable to get vaccinated participating. The next question is, what are the local boards of health role? What's their role once these orders have been lifted? Are localities able to maintain stricter rules, for example, continued mask mandate? And if so, what would be the basis?
Okay, well, there will still be a public health, there will be an advisory, but there'll be a public health order. And I believe the answer is yes, that a community can have stricter rules in their community. And that has been sort of the part of the process all the way through this, that while we make certain decisions that are statewide, we've always said that if a community feels they need to do something different that's stricter, they are permitted to do that.
And that would come under the ongoing public health emergency that will be continuing existing. That's different than the state of emergency, which is more of an umbrella.
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Thank you. Now, next one. Are councils on aging going to be lumped into the congregate / vulnerable population setting in order to continue to require masks to be worn? So, and we have another question later in the chat similarly about senior citizen centers, because you've talked about the order going forward for schools and other settings, nursing homes and so on. The question is, what about senior centers and senior programming?
Okay. I view congregate and vulnerable population as being residential settings.
Yeah.
That's different from a council on age setting. So no, that would not be part of the required face covering provision that we are putting in place to continue after May 29th.
Yeah, yet similar to the previous question, could communities put in place a requirement for the senior citizen drop-in center and
they other can. Kinds of programming? Yes, they can.
A mask requirement. Great. Yes. So the answer there is that they communities on an individual basis
could require. And some of the consideration could be whether it's an indoor activity or an outdoor activity, you know, for example. But that would be a local decision at that point. It would not be a state requirement.
Thank you. Here's a question that first starts out by thanking you for your leadership and your support. And then says, on public meetings and emergency orders, outdoor dining and liquor licenses, do we know any word on, so there's a lot covered here, but in particular, the one is on the executive order on, for example, serving alcohol outdoors that came from the state of emergency, but also the expedited permitting and the allowance of outdoor commercial activity, notwithstanding existing permanent local bylaws and so on. What happens to those at the end of the state of emergency?
Okay. There's a lot of questions about this, so we'll continue to work with you. The current orders do allow for 60 days after the state of emergency ends, and that's what the current orders allow for outdoor dining and some of the provisions related to that. Some options could be that you as a municipality might be able to, depending on what your local bylaws say, issue special permits for outdoor dining through a normal procedural process. And that could start now for you to analyze if your bylaw allows for that to start a special permit process rather than waiting for the end of the 60-day period, which would put you somewhere in September when that's beautiful time of year where outdoor dining is enjoyable. You don't want to get stuck. You might want to look at your bylaws now, see if that is an option and whether you can have a special permit for outdoor dining. Another option could be if you wanted to have a permanent solution around an as-of-right allowance for outside dining. And if your bylaws don't allow for that, that might require further action and approval by a town meeting. So depending on what you have lined up for town meeting, whether you could have a special town meeting within your town meeting. I remember doing that in my days as a town meeting member, or there's some other way for you to process a change to your bylaw to allow as a right zoning for outside dining. Regarding liquor licenses, a local licensing board, usually it's your board of selectmen, can approve a change in the definition of a licensee's premises to accommodate a new and expanded outside use. This would require notice and a public hearing. Oftentimes the hearing must be held within 30 days of an application for a modification. And so you'd want to start to think about whether or not you as a local board could change the definition of a licensee's premises. There are some concerns about spaces that needing to be contiguous and appurtenant. So that is something that we'll have to examine more. You will have to examine more. And we have been in conversation with ABCC that indicate that they would want to work with you and defer to the local licensing board about changes in premises. So there's more that we can do there, but amendment to the liquor licenses for outdoor dining is a process that starts with your local licensing board.
Lieutenant Governor, the part of what we have just over the last couple of days received input from so many different circumstances, conditions, and so on that we think that at a minimum and some legislative solution will be necessary to serve as a bridge to be able to give communities time to work out the changes in bylaws and ordinances and in licenses and permitting just because of the variation. The 60 days after the end of the state of emergency would come in the middle of August, I think now, which means that there'd be no way for town meetings to actually act in a timely manner without having a discontinuance of authority for local action. So this is one where we look forward to working with you and the legislature on a solution that provides for a bridge to the future, if you will, in terms of this and all of the other steps that ordinarily take place locally to work this
out. We'll work with our legal department on what that bridge needs to look like, right? And if there's some flexibility around 60 days, that would at least allow for the current season that expands into the fall to be honored, and what that would take and whether that can be done through our future order or it needs to be done in a different manner.
Excellent. Thank you. That's one of the whole series of questions. The next one is the big and most urgent one that local officials are asking. It's in the chat, which has to do with what happens to the ability to hold the remote/virtual meetings cities and towns transition to so quickly, thanks to your executive order that was issued on March 12th, that essentially provided for the local authority to hold remote and virtual meetings during the public health emergency. That authority under the executive order ends on when the executive order ends. And that is less than a month from now. And cities and towns are extraordinarily interested in maintaining that ability and that authority going forward, especially since a significant portion, while it's extremely impressive to have such a high percentage of Massachusetts residents vaccinated, a lot of residents won't have been vaccinated. A lot of town halls have been reconfigured to use the meeting space to safely distance employees. And it's really hard to turn that back so quickly. And then there are a lot of residents who are immunocompromised and will be waiting for a much longer period of time. So continuation of that ability to hold remote meetings is vitally important. And that's the question, what happens to that at the end of the state of emergency?
Okay, so again, this is another item on the open meeting law around what this transition should look like. And June 15th falls right in the month where there may be, for instance, a lot of town meetings and the assembly of larger group for that purpose. So we can take a look at that and see what additional time might be needed in order to accommodate that point, you know, June 15th. Comes and what we can manage there. And relative to boards that have been using remote means to engage the public, we've all seen a high level of participation through remote access. And as I understand it, there is no change to the current law required for a public body to voluntarily continue electronic remote access for the public. I think what's happened over the course of this year, we've embedded more technology to allow for that to occur, which is good, and that can continue. The piece that needs attention is the requirement for a quorum of the members of a body, for the members of a planning board or the members of a conservation commission. You need a quorum of members of that body to be present in order for that meeting to take place. And that was under the executive order waived and allowed for the participants of the particular board to also be remote. And so that needs to be analyzed and determined how much time can be adjusted there for that to continue, because that piece of it would end with the governor's state of emergency ending on June 15th.
But we look forward to working with you on that. But we, the benefits of transparency and the benefits of increased public participation, and the fact that while the state of emergency is lifted, we'll still be in a transition period for a significant period of time regarding public comfort in attending crowded municipal town hall meetings and so on. We look forward to working with you on an immediate solution to get. To get this answered before June 15th. And we look forward to working with the legislature too. So we thank you. That's of critical importance. Here's one for the finance people. Will the end of the state of emergency on June 15th result in any changes to municipalities' ability to spend CARES funding after that date? Are the rules likely to change? Is there any, and then there's a follow-up question regarding the ability to request FEMA reimbursements for COVID expenses after the state of emergency is lifted for PPP and so on. So if you can help communities deal with that, Heath has unmuted himself already. Go away. Go ahead, Heath, thanks.
Yeah, so I'll take them in reverse order. On the FEMA public assistance reimbursement grants, the covered period for FEMA PA is currently scheduled to conclude on September 30th, 2021. So the end of September, that's a federal designated period. And so the state of emergency discussion doesn't influence that, doesn't influence that program. In terms of the Municipal Coronavirus Relief Fund, we had previously articulated June 30th as a deadline to submit a request for reimbursement under that program, under the Coronavirus Relief Fund Municipal Program, as a way of pushing folks to get their applications in. You know, that component of the program has been open for many months now, 5+ months now, and we received a relatively few number of applications. So really pushing people to submit those expenses that they have incurred for under that program by the end of this fiscal year, by June 30th. I think it is also worthy of observation that the new funds coming from the federal government under the American Rescue Plan Act are largely overlapping. They have sort of the same as it relates to direct COVID costs, the same eligibility parameters. And so, certainly one of the things that we are cognizant of is the potential compliance risks associated with having multiple funding streams available for the same types or exactly the same types of expenses. So that is certainly something that we're going to want to work with municipalities on as we go forward over the next several weeks and months.
And of course, highlighting the desire to stretch all of these funds as far as possible and to leverage them with each other. So it does get pretty complicated. For example, the next question in the chat has to do with having a mid-June town meeting outdoors and planning the additional costs, hoping that those will continue to be reimbursable. Even though it's after the state of emergency. So.
Yes. Right. Yep.
Great. I do notice that Jess from the governor's office has posted the yesterday's press release that includes a number of links and in detailed statements, as well as the mask requirement webpage that's been updated for the requirements after May 29th or May 29th effective. And then let's see, we have, we've already had the question about open meetings and the extension of and the expiration of the state of emergency. Let's see, the next question is, congratulations, Lieutenant Governor, on your 37th meeting. Stretching, it seems like well more than a year, doesn't it? Questions concerning the temporary extension of outdoor dining and liquor licenses. Again, there's a, that you've already answered that question, but that's another point from a small city that's saying this is really important to our downtown, filing legislation. Do you anticipate filing legislation or otherwise maintaining the regulations around outdoor dining? Another community talking about that. And that's, again, I think that that bridge to the future is critically important so that communities can work to make sure that all of their restaurants, all of their businesses downtown have that ability to plan going forward. I want to thank Jana for putting the recreational, the link to the recreational guidelines and standards in the chat, the link there. And then here's a question about just confirming that communities will still have the ability to require face covering mandates, masking mandates on municipal property. And so will communities have that ability to be able to say visitors to town hall, visitors to these municipal buildings will be required to wear face coverings. And then that's one. And then the second is in terms of businesses, could you go into a little more detail about the authority that businesses will have to require, have requirements on their patrons?
Yes, and a municipality and their own municipal buildings, as an employer, you can have your own rules relative to the public's interaction with your workforce. And so if you as a town hall wish to have masking continue in your building, you can do that. Just like a private business owner might decide that they want to continue to have masking in place and have those signs posted in order to do that. And I think the messaging around that will be respect the wishes of either a municipal operator or a private business operator and respect and honor what their rules are. There's a reason for it. Even though the state rule and the CDC guidance is what it is, you can go beyond that if that is what you choose to do.
Thank you. The state of emergency has also provided relief for certain building codes in homeless shelters. Does that need to get extended beyond the June 15th date through some other mechanism? Or will that?
What is the question?
The question is, the state of emergency has also provided relief for certain building codes and homeless shelters. And the statement is we need to extend that relief beyond June 15th, please.
I'm not familiar with that relief offhand, I'll say. I don't think certainly does not appear to be encapsulated in something that, you know, was in an executive order to my knowledge, but we will look into this. I've already flagged it for people to look into, to what extent are there, you know, places where building codes have been relieved in light of the state of emergency. I'm not familiar with it coming from, you know, coming out of our office, I'll say that, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So, and I know that there was, you know, there were a lot of efforts around increasing shelter capacity, you know, in that period, right in the middle, I think, you know, just particularly in December, January. You know, that there may well have been relief provisions that were implemented by the licensing entities themselves then. I just, you know, that will require a little more inquiry.
Thank you. And I suspect that that's the case, that either the granting authorities, the licensing authorities, and so on said that you'd still be eligible for reimbursement. You'd still be eligible to stand up programs with greater, for example, density or something like that.
Yeah.
So that is something that MMA will also be taking a look at.
Okay. Yeah.
Flag that question was asked by Mayor Linda Tyer from Pittsfield. So she'd be, if you wanted to follow up, that would be a good office to connect with. Here's a question. When can we resume in-person meetings with local boards and committees? And I'll just add, that, of course, one of the challenges there is that there could be many local boards and committees where not everyone has either had an opportunity to be vaccinated or can be vaccinated. So this would probably be an individual decision. But the question is, when could in-person meetings with local boards and committees be
On May 29th, all restrictions, capacity limits, gathering limits end. They're gone. So unless you want to have a further restriction or any restriction, that would be a local restriction. It would not be a state restriction. All of those go away on May 29th, except for the specific masking requirements that we will continue after May 29th under the public health order. And there are specific places that we've listed that are consistent with the CDC guidance that will require masking indoors.
And then I've thank you, Lieutenant Governor. And then I received, I guess I artfully asked the question initially of regarding having to file a safety plan regarding a parade before Memorial Day. I think the question was more generic after the 29th. Are we correct that there will be no requirement for a safety plan, no restrictions on the-
That's correct. There would be no requirement for a safety plan, but if there's a local provision for that particular event, then you'd have to honor the local provision.
Great, excellent, thank you. Here's a question on youth sports from the mayor of Beverly saying, thank you very much for all of the information. We're excited that our youth sports kids won't have to wear masks while on the field playing starting today. Given this, does it make sense that high school athletes need to keep wearing face coverings while competing in spring sports?
They do not need to wear a face covering competing in spring sports.
I think I saw that the MIAA already actually adjusted today, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yeah, so the rules will all change today, that they don't need the mask outdoors from today until the 29th. And then on the 29th, the sports rules will be entirely rescinded.
Okay, excellent. The mayor got his answer, and I think it's the answer he was looking for. thank you. And then more points about the ABCC, the Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission, and the need for a bridge to the future, given just how many applications would be coming in, how much of an administrative burden it would be to be able to process all these changes. Let's see. There's just a request for additional time for any changes in the open meeting law because communities had so much.
Just let's go back to the change in premises. If a municipality were to use that provision now before a permanent fix is made, does anyone from legal have anything you'd like to add to this discussion around your discussions with ABCC?
No, we have talked to them about the point that person raised about sort of many, many licenses and about their sort of what kinds of standing authority they might have to be able to, accommodate that in short order. So that's a discussion that has already started. I can't say that it's finalized yet, but we are attentive to the problem that that was asked about for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Now, the next few questions come up in an area where MMA has had some discussions with your administration, Lieutenant Governor, regarding the actual cutoff for the ability to seek reimbursement for expenditures under the CARES Act. A number of questions have come up in the chat saying that they believe that the federal deadline was December 31st, 2021, and that was also the state deadline, but now they're hearing that it's June 30th, 2021. And so there are a couple of questions. One, what happens if that deadline is too quick for communities that have been planning on using the funds for the first part of next fiscal year before December 31st. And the second is, what happens to the municipal money if communities aren't able to access it all by June 30th and it reverts to the Commonwealth?
Heath is nodding his head. He's ready.
Sure. So the questioner is right that the language passed by the U.S. Congress extended the covered period for the coronavirus relief fund through the end of this calendar year. Just as has always been the case, we have had different dates by which municipalities needed to apply for the funds over the course of the program. Folks will remember we had a application round that ended in the middle of June last year, almost a year ago now. We had an application round that ended at the end of October last year. And then we've had this reconciliation period that we originally anticipated would be sort of closing out this program at the end of December or January, as people were sort of closing out the program back when we believed that the end of the covered period would be the end of the last calendar year. And what we have done over the last several months is simply sort of kick out that deadline as the situation was changing at the federal level. So what's the case now is that ARPA has been passed and is in place. Additional funds are coming to communities through that source that are available to use for that source. FEMA reimbursements are now being reimbursed at 100% instead of 75%. So the sort of the complementary program to the municipal program is now fully reimbursing for eligible costs in that regard. And so, it remains the case that the application for the reconciliation period closes June 30th. So we strongly encourage municipalities that have eligible costs to submit them to us so that we can review those applications and then get reimbursements out to you in a timely fashion.
Can I just want Heath, the communities, I think the primary question is communities, do they or do they not have through December 31st?
Right. So costs incurred through December 31st are obviously eligible to be reimbursed through the CVRF. Yep.
Yet the application needs to be made before June 30th.
Yes.
By June
30th. Please apply by June 30th. Yes.
Apply by June 30th for but planned expenditures during that leading up to December 31st. That's a good clarification. Thank you. We have a couple of ARPA questions, and before we turn it over to you, Heath, for a 10-minute or a 5-minute advertisement about our upcoming webinar on ARPA, Lieutenant Governor, there was a question about testing in the schools, and what about testing mandates for students? The municipalities and schools have the ability to require testing for student athletes. What's the protocol going forward for, of course, reopening schools? But the resources to enable appropriate monitoring at the level, since most students will not certainly be vaccinated for a long time.
We have a pool testing surveillance program that many school districts are participating in, and will continue to offer that. I'm assuming in the fall. I can get further details for you. But the surveillance testing is a really good opportunity for schools to sort of get an appreciation for the presence of COVID in their school community. And I would urge schools that are looking to understand what that program is to study it and see whether you would want to incorporate that into your school district for the fall. We're obviously working with DESE on providing feedback to communities to finish out the school year, and we have not established exactly the ground game for the fall, other than that, you know, we are lifting our restrictions. We'll continue to take guidance from the CDC and see what they have to say about schools this fall. But the idea is that kids have to be back in school. We have resources available to us to make sure that it's safe. And we've been doing that all the course of this year. And we anticipate a full participation of in-person learning for the next school year.
Excellent. And then I don't know the answer to this. Do municipalities and schools have the ability to require testing for student athletes going forward, even as the face covering restrictions are lifted and so on? Are communities able to develop those? Is that a...
I think there are opportunities to test available to everyone. I would urge everyone to, you know, finish the school year strong and then assess what the best strategy is for the fall. But the idea is that students will be back in-person learning in our school districts across our Commonwealth.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Since there are a couple of questions now, ARPA related, I think that have already been answered, but it's a good opportunity for Heath to give an overview of his activities, his team's activities, and our the upcoming 3 o'clock on Thursday MMA administration webinar, where essentially Heath and the National League of Cities are going to make a deeper dive presentation. Heath, thank you for everything you're doing.
Great. And, thanks, Jeff, to all of your folks at MMA. It's been great to work with over the last year. So the program guidance associated with the American Rescue Plan Act coronavirus local fiscal recovery funds was issued by the U.S. Treasury on Monday a week ago, May 10th. There is a lot of material in that guidance, in those documents that were issued by Treasury. I'm reminded that as part of the Coronavirus Relief Fund, the guidance, the program guidance associated with that program a year ago now was, I think, 8 pages long. And I think the quick reference guide that Treasury issued last week is 8 pages long. So, and then the primary guidance document itself is about 150 pages. So a lot of material to go through. The high level themes I would pull out and flag for people as you are starting to think about planning around these dollars, I would highlight a couple of things, three things. One is that over and over again in the guidance, the Treasury emphasizes the importance of the tie to COVID. So the expenses that we incur related to these new dollars, we're going to need to be able to justify, to document, to relate to a problem that was either created by or exacerbated by COVID. So I think the tie to the COVID public health emergency is the first key takeaway that should anchor us as we're thinking about the planning process. Second, a focus on equity throughout the guidance. A lot of emphasis on the role, the disproportionate impact that COVID has had on particular communities, defined either geographically or by a set of characteristics. The guidance calls on us to take the concerns related to equity, to keep those central as we think about planning for how to deploy these funds. And then the third thing from a pretty technical standpoint, I would observe is that these funds have some pretty significant compliance and reporting obligations that are going to be with us for a while, well into calendar year 2027. So I would strongly encourage folks to undertake a deliberate planning process, and we're looking forward to helping with that process with the webinar on Thursday. And with some of the other efforts that the Lieutenant Governor and others have mentioned, today and as we go forward.
Thank you very much. And all municipal CEOs who are on this call should have received from the MMA and an invitation to the webinar on ARPA. We call it ARPA. Some people call it ARPA, and other people call it American Rescue Plan or ARP. We're calling it ARPA. Everything else, we're not sure about until we go through and answer your specific questions. So join that webinar. Heath and the experts on that call will be a fantastic resource for all of you. The Lieutenant Governor, we've covered the questions in the chat. Would like to give you a moment to wrap it up, and then I'll have a couple of announcements.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jeff, and to the team, to every single one of you on this call and the prior 36 calls that we've had. I agree, and I've seen in the chat that these exchanges have been very helpful, almost in real time, exchanging information that is helpful to keeping people safe, making decisions, and continuing the administration of services through state and local government. So thank you. A big thank you to our team that's come to these conversations. Obviously, Heath, you'll continue to be a part of additional briefings. So thank you for your leadership and clarity around very complicated federal funding requirements. I want to thank the steady hand of Sean Cronin at the Division of Local Services that continues to be available to all of you to provide that technical assistance, that advisory, that consult that you need when things come up as they always do. I want to thank Dr. Madoff and Jana Ferguson from the Department of Public Health for always being available to us. We would like to see you on that bike more so in these upcoming weeks, Jana, but thank you for working through some really complicated items, especially with your partners over at the local boards of health in our municipalities. Dr. Madoff being an expert in this field, many of us coming to these calls a year ago, we're not quite familiar with epidemiology and everything that's come with that. And you've been an enormous source of support to all of us. I want to thank the legal team. You had Bob Ross here today, but the legal team has been working on these matters with all of you all throughout the year. And thank you for your continued work as the municipalities transition, as well as state government transitions into the next phase. And I want to give my staff, Lily Zarella and Jess Bellevue, a big round of applause because they've been preparing these briefings with me all the way through. And of course, participating in the chat with all the useful information and then following up with Jeff to make sure that information flows to all of you. And again, just thank you. This has been the format that we've used over the course of this past year. And we'll just move to a new format of communicating and working together and partnering together in these upcoming weeks. And then in the longer term, as we recover and rebound and reinvigorate our communities, particularly our downtowns and main streets all across our state. So thank you all very much and look forward to LGAC and better opportunities to see you in person in your cities, towns, with the governor and our team so that we can literally get there to celebrate your successes and your continued good work for the people of your communities. Thank you all so very much. I'm so grateful to have your partnership.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. It's been really fabulous working with you and with your terrific team. You've said thank yous to them and rightfully so. Of course, we have Candace Pierce, the MMA's Director of Communications and Membership, and Timory Cook, who's been the master making these sessions work. She's our conference and meeting planner, and they've been really fabulous. They do all the work at MMA. I get a chance to stand up here and have the camera on. There's a lot of work to be done, and while this may be the end of our regularly scheduled every one or two or three week municipal CEO briefings, I know, Lieutenant Governor, that on an as-needed basis, you will be the first to step up and meet virtually and in person with local officials. There are a lot of questions during this transition period, and your leadership is going to be needed more than ever to help guide us and work through as partners together. We've already heard a lot about in the chat about of concern about this transition period, and we know that we'll be working with you and the governor and our partners in the legislature to provide that bridge to the future for our downtown businesses, for our ability to continue to hold remote meetings and virtual meetings, engage the public, and get through the public health emergency, which will last a bit longer until we get everyone vaccinated and other states catch up to Massachusetts. And that's the final point I'd like to make. Everyone here should feel very proud in how Massachusetts has performed, not just at the state level, which has been extremely impressive, but that success wouldn't be possible without the work of the municipal chief executives and your teams in all of your communities, really out there on the front lines, ranging from vaccinations to protecting the most vulnerable, to standing up unprecedented services to those who need them the most. You've been really amazing, and we look forward to continuing our work together. Again, a summary of this call will be posted on the MMA website, and links to all of the information that have been that's been provided here will be there as well. And we look forward to seeing all of you in just 2 days at the MMA's ARPA webinar with Heath and his team and with the National League of Cities as we talk about how we recover using federal assistance. So thank you all. Lieutenant Governor, thanks again. You take care.